as I am now doing. So, announcements, reminder, there's homework to be done, so do it. And a good reason to is because on Friday, next Friday, there'll be a quiz, and the format of the quiz is the following. There's one piece of paper, and on the front there's a problem, on the back there's a problem. So you can fill in the answer below your problems, and the problems are two problems off of the homework. Reminder, I have office hours on Tuesday from 11 to 1. There's a holiday on Monday, so there will be no class at all on Monday, but I'll still be at my office hours on Tuesday. Today what we're going to talk about is substitution, which is a technique for integration. It's a method that allows you to take some seemingly very, very complicated integrals and turn them into hopefully simpler ones, and then find either the value of a definite integral or a function that is an antiderivative of another function. That's what we'll do today. And then on Wednesday, when we come back, I'll teach you how to find areas between curves, and we'll finally get a little bit to volumes. So you have, you know, a vase or something, you want to find out how much water will fit in it. You'll know how to do that sort of problem. I just wanted to mention that computers can occasionally be useful when learning calculus. I personally find them useful in the following way. If you have an integral and you want to know what it is, and you can't find the answer anywhere in the book, you can't find it in any tables of integrals, and you're just really curious, some crazy integral, you can type it into a computer and very often it will just give you the answer. That can be nice. For example, if you didn't find 1 over 1 plus x squared in the table, there it is. The way I find computers most useful is if I do a problem completely by hand and want to know whether or not I'm right, I can use the computer to check my answer. And that's particularly nice because if there's a sequence of steps and at the end the answer is supposed to be, for example, a half, and you get 2/3, and you know the answer is supposed to be a half only because the back of the book says 1/2, it's nice to have a computer which could also tell you that the answer is a half, so that you know there's something wrong with your steps. But moreover, often with calculus, you have a sequence of steps, and using a computer cleverly, you can verify that two things you think are equal are actually equal. So you can verify various bits and pieces of the procedure. So in other words, a very good way to use a computer in learning calculus is as a much more powerful version of a solutions manual. Also, if you want to try problems that aren't explicitly given in the book and know that you get the right answer when you work it out by hand, with a computer, you can try variations of a problem. For example, with 1 over 1 plus x, what about 10 over 7 plus x squared? Integrate that, and you see the answer here, and it's a slight variation on the previous problem. It would be that you could try this and then see if you get the same answer, even though this is probably not in the back of any book. Yes, please.
What program is this?
The program I'm using here is called Maxima. It's completely free, open source. You can download it from this website, maxima.sourceforge.net. So you don't have to pay any money or go to any special computer labs to use this program. Completely free. It's available for Windows, Linux, and OS X. So anybody can install it on their laptop. And there's really, it's a very big, complicated program, but there's really only one command you need to know about for most of this course, which is the command integrate. It takes as first argument the function with some notation that's described in the manual, and the second argument is the variable you want to integrate with respect to. You can also give two other arguments, which are the endpoints if you want to compute a definite integral, like that. That's a big number, but it's a specific number. Let me do a simpler one. So integrate sine of x as x goes from 0 to, the way you enter pi is percent pi. So you have to end the line with a semicolon, and you get 2. That was what we did the first day of class. So this can be just a useful thing to have around. Type in any function, it'll integrate it completely free. You don't have to buy Mathematica or Maple or anything really expensive if this is all you want to do. This can do neat 3D plots and stuff too. But
is this program similar to the one on the TI-83 calculator?
In what it does, yes, very similar. In how it does it, it's a completely different implementation.
I mean, but it's a computer program. The same results using this as the one on my computer? Because, I mean, like, the way you enter it and everything is the same.
Very similar, yeah. It's not exactly the same, but it is similar. The answers may or may not be the same. For example, this one's very clever when you integrate, let's see, things like... See how it leaves it in a nice factored form? A lot of programs don't do that. Like Mathematica or Maple give it to you all expanded out. It's kind of not so pleasant. So this program is pretty nice in that way. But the answers, I mean, it's all math, so they have to essentially be equivalent. The integrals are, unless you give it, unless there's a bug in either the calculator or this program, the answer should be equal. Yeah. This might be a little easier to use because you're typing on a keyboard instead of the calculator. But the TI-89 is also a great tool for verifying integrals. So I just wanted to point this out really quickly, because you might find it useful and you don't have to pay anything to get this. It's just something you can install on any computer. And yeah, basically you just needed this one command, integrate, and put a semicolon when you want to end the line. And you can read the documentation if you want more. And you can ignore this if you're happy using Maple or Mathematica already. Questions about Maxima. I should say that Maxima was written first in the 1960s at MIT as kind of a research project that was funded by the Department of Energy. And it was written in Lisp. And then over the years, it was commercialized by some people. But the original project was funded by the Department of Energy, which is taxpayer money. So the code, after some lobbying, eventually became free and open source because people wanted it to be that way. So it used to be that things sponsored by taxpayer money would then be free for everybody to use. So that's why it's a free program. Okay, now the substitution rule. So in the previous course you may have taken in calculus, you hopefully learned a lot of ways to differentiate functions. You had some big complicated function f of x, and you wanted to compute f prime of x, there are a whole bunch of different tricks and techniques to do this. For example, you have the chain rule, the product rule, etc., etc. So there are all kinds of methods, like f times g prime is f prime g plus f g prime, etc., etc. There's a rule for the quotient, and so on. Each of these rules has an analog in integration. The big difference, though, between integration and differentiation is that integration is more exciting. With differentiation, you have a function as input, and you pretty much just follow your nose. If it's a product of two other things, use the product rule. You simplify down, and you get an answer. With integration, you have a function as input, f, and you really, really like to compute integral of f dx, because it would give you an amazing way of computing areas under curves, which translates into all kinds of other things. So you want to compute this, and it's not at all obvious which techniques you're supposed to use. You don't just follow your nose in the same sense that you do with differentiation. There are a whole bunch of different methods, and you just don't know which one a priori to use. But you'll learn that in this course. Though sometimes you could be presented with an integral like e to the 1 over x squared. No matter what you do with this one, you're probably not going to find, well, you definitely cannot find a nice, simple answer. So sometimes there is no really nice, simple answer. But very, very often there is, or at least you can transform your integral into something that has a nice, simple answer plus something well understood that maybe doesn't have a simple expression as an integral. So again, our goal is to compute these things in a lot of cases, and I'm going to tell you some strategies. So it's, you're faced with an integral. These are some things you can try that very often, in practice, will allow you to compute the integral. And the first one is it's called substitution rule. And the substitution rule just comes from the chain rule. That's where it arises. So if you have, so recall the chain rule. The chain rule is really nice. It says if you have a function g of x and you substitute it into a function f of x, then the derivative of the whole thing is f prime of g of x times g prime of x. This is times. So you can use this all over the place. For example, the derivative of sine x squared is the derivative of sine cosine, so it's cosine x squared times 2x. And there you are. So I think because it greatly extends the range of functions which you can compute the derivative. Given any functions which you know the derivative, you can then do it for any compositions of those functions. You get a huge number of functions which you can compute derivatives once you know a few, just from the chain rule. Now, all you have to do is make a little observation, and this will lead to a nice method for integration that allows you to solve all kinds of integrals that seem very, very complicated, but once you see how to use this, you can just nail very quickly. So here's what the substitution rule says. It says that integral f of, so let's call this a proposition, substitution rule, integral of f of g of x, g prime of x, dx, this is equal to, so I'll use a little notation, let's just for simplicity let u equal g of x. This is the same as integral f of u du, where, by du, I mean g prime of x dx. So it doesn't really look like I've done anything, has it? Seems pretty reasonable. But it's great because it says that to compute this seemingly complicated thing, if f is somehow a nicer function, like over here, f is just a sine function, all you have to do is compute the integral of that nicer function, but there could be some complexity because of, or complications because of du being g prime of x dx. So that's it. That's all there is to it. And see if, just want to say about why it's true. So why on earth is this really true? Certainly the notation makes it seem very reasonable if this would be true. It just looks like I've essentially copied the same thing over with some substitutions. But a little bit more of an argument, I'll give you a little bit more of a reason to believe this, because you might be in doubt. Okay? So just because you're good, I'll give you more of an argument. So let's suppose capital F is a function so that F prime is little f. So capital F is an antiderivative of little f. Oh, by the way, before I go further, there is a hypothesis in order for this to be true. G needs to be a continuous function where it's defined, and on the image of G, f should be continuous. So you could make up really bizarre functions for which this wouldn't be true, and those aren't the ones we'll be considering in this class. And you can see the hypotheses in the notes or in the book. So simple hypotheses are needed. You also, of course, need that g prime is differentiable. Or, sorry, that g is differentiable, so that g prime makes sense. So let's suppose f is an antiderivative of little f. This exists because of our hypothesis that f is differentiable. I mean, sorry, f is continuous. So capital F equals an antiderivative of little f. Then this relation holds. So here you can write integral f of g of x, g prime of x dx this is equal to, I'm just going to replace little f by f prime. This is equal to integral capital F prime of g of x, g prime of x dx. So I really haven't done much yet. Now, the chain rule, which I mentioned over there, says that we can rewrite the inside as the derivative with respect to x of capital F of g of x. Okay, so what I've done just now is I've taken this and I've rewritten it as the derivative of a different function, capital F of g of x. And now integration and differentiation, they're inverse operations. So here you have the integral of the derivative of a certain function. So those two cancel out. So the result is just f of g of x. Now f is an antiderivative of little f. So this is integral of little f with g of x substituted in. And that's just what this is. This is the integral of little f with u equals g of x substituted in. So, right, but I'll write this as integral of f of u to u. See, this is, you take the integral, just think of f as a function of a variable, and find the antiderivative, an antiderivative of that. This is a much better concept. So capital F of g of x is this integral, where here u is g of x. Okay, so that's it. Yes, please.
What's the integral?
Right, going from here to here.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the fundamental theorem of calculus. It says that how to say it. So if you want to compute the integral of something, don't worry at all about what's in here for a minute. You find a function whose derivative is that something, and that's the answer. Right? That's what the integral is. By definition, the integral is a function whose derivative is that thing. So what is a function whose derivative is the derivative with respect to x of f of g of x? We'll say it again slowly. Give me a function whose derivative is this quantity right here. And the answer is right here. This function is a function whose derivative is the quantity inside of the integral. You can put anything you want right here. I'm just saying integration, it's not really the fundamental theorem of calculus, it's just the definition of the integral. The integral of the derivative of anything at all is just equal to that anything up to a constant.
So they cancel each other out, basically?
Yes, exactly. Up to a constant. For example, what's the integral of the derivative with respect to x of, say, x squared? Let's just do it. You get it? So here you differentiate, you get integral 2x dx, and then you feel like you just wasted your time because you're going to have to integrate, so we get x squared again, plus a constant. So they cancel out, integration and differentiation. That's why I have a constant. So this is just a hopefully convincing argument for why this, which seems very notational, is true. And what you really need, though, is not a convincing that this is true. You need to see how to use it in practice. And that's what I'll show you now. I'm going to show you a bunch of examples, very carefully worked out step by step, in which you see how to apply the substitution rule to find intervals. And that will be most of the rest of today. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about a few related things, for example, definite integrals and how the substitution rule applies. So the first example is integral x squared, x cubed plus 5 to the power of 9 dx. Actually, instead of 9, let's put 389, which is my favorite number, and also my license plate. So there is a polynomial. Definitely everybody in this room could, if they spent enough time, compute the integral of this, because you know how to integrate a polynomial. But multiplying all that out would be, well, unpleasant for most people. So let me show you a better way to do it. So here's what we'll do. We'll let u be x cubed plus 5, and then du, that's 3x squared dx. And we'll just make that substitution I put over there here, and we'll get a much easier integral, okay? So if du is 3x squared dx, what is x squared times dx? Please sit. So what is what I've just underlined in terms of du, given this relationship?
One-third du.
Perfect, one-third du. Excellent. So the underlying part is one-third du. Let's bring the underlying part. And it's okay. Here, the notation for calculus is incredibly brilliant. You can simply let u be whatever you want, let du be the derivative with the dx right here, and you just substitute that back in over here and get rid of all the x's, and it works. And the thing I stated over there says it works. It's correct. Which is amazing that the notation so naturally suggests the right thing to do. So that's this part. Now I have to do the other part. X cubed plus 5, what's that in terms of u? Well, we set it up so it's just u, so it's easy. U to the power of 389. And now we integrate this, 1 over 390, u to the power of 390 times 1/3, plus a constant. And now, finally, you could have made a different choice of u here. Anyone in this room could have made a different choice of u. All of you could have made a different choice of yourselves. And let's put everything back in terms of x so that we'd all have the same answer. So x cubed plus 5 to the power of 390. And then I'll just put the third over out front. Is it confusing? That's a time sign. Okay, so I just integrated this polynomial and I even factored the result, but I didn't work very hard to do that. It's very nice, isn't it? And even if you have never heard of the substitution rule or the chain rule, you might still have, just from the notation, naturally thought that this would be kind of a good idea. Just let u be this part. Figure out what dx is in terms of that. You do that by computing the derivative of u. But that tells you what dx is. If you know, if you know dx and you know x, then you can just change everything into u's. And it works. Okay, any questions about that? Yes, please.
Do you still need a plus e for the...
Yes, I forgot that. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, let's do more. That one wasn't as exciting as the ones to come. So here's one. Integral x squared over square root 1 minus x squared dx. So that one looks pretty scary, at least to me at first glance. Any idea what we might do in order to compute this integral?
Calculator.
Okay. But you feel like you want to be better than your calculator and get the answer first, and then see what the calculator spits out, and then maybe it gives an ugly answer, and you can feel even better after that happens. You in the front and the middle.
Square everything?
Square everything, okay. How would that help?
Get rid of the square root on the bottom.
Okay.
Can we make u one negative x?
You could. Just let me finish adjusting his comment. He said square everything, and that would give us some hope to compute the integral of the square of that function, which maybe we could do. But that's just a different problem. That's my point. I mean, it could be in some complicated situation when you compute a certain integral and you can't, and you can compute the square, so you compute that, and that gives you some information about the original problem, like maybe an upper bound or a lower bound. But here I don't think that's a good strategy. Plus there's going to be a really nice clean way of using a certain substitution to just nail this thing down exactly. Over on the right. Does somebody have a comment over there?
Make u
yes,
one,
you did.
1 minus x squared.
Let u be 1 minus x squared. The second you do that, now it's clear. You just do this procedure, you compute du, try to put everything back in. If it works, then you go from there. So basically there's a strategy, which is make a substitution for a given value of u. Once you decide on it, then everything else is follow your notes for at least the next minute or so. So now du is minus 2x dx. And let's see what happens.
Okay. You make x squared in terms of u.
Great. But we still need dx dx.
Okay. Copy.
And dx would be du over the 2x.
You're right. Okay, so x squared. Let's just see what happens. X squared is 1 minus... X squared is 1 minus u. Okay, so that's in the top, 1 minus u. And square root of 1 minus x squared is square root of u. And dx is... du over minus 2x, but that's not good. Yeah, this copying is really hard. Unintentionally, kind of hard problem.
I think I mean that with x rather than x squared, which I do profusely apologize. Hold on there.
Okay, so I did miscopy the problem. Sorry. But there's still a lesson to be learned here, which is we tried, but what happened here? We ended up with du over minus 2x, x is square root of 1 minus u. So that's annoying because it's really not that much better than what we started with. So sometimes if you try a substitution, you get something that isn't better. So let me continue with the example that now I'll give you the one that I really meant to give you. It isn't much different. So, yes, please.
You seem to have to knock the square off the bottom instead of the top.
You mean here?
Yeah.
Okay, this is a totally different example. I'll put it on the other side of the board, so there's no possibility of confusion. Thank you. Okay, this is a new example. Okay, so are you referring to the old example? Or? Yeah. That's what I did. So the mistake when I wrote this on the board was that I put an x squared here and I just meant to put an x. But that said, again, you see that somehow the substitution that we tried didn't help. And we should use a different method for this, which I don't know off the top of my head. But I'm sure you're a calculator. Okay, so let's see what happens over here. What do you want to try for a substitution? Yes?
Set u equals x squared.
Okay, let's give it a shot. U equals x squared. Du is then 2x dx. And we can try this and we'll get an equivalent integral. Let's see. So u, then dx here is u over 2 root u. This is over square root of 1 minus square root of u. And that doesn't seem really easy to me. It's true, but not so easy. So let's try again. Do people like 1 minus x? OK, let's do 1 minus x, see what happens. So that was true, but not so useful. So now let's next try. Try again. Nothing wrong with being a substitution that doesn't give you the answer. Let's try again with u equal to 1 minus x. Now du equals minus dx. It's nice and clean. And going straight down again. This is integral, x squared. We can solve for x here, not too hard. X is equal to 1 minus u. And you get on the top, 1 minus u quantity squared. And on the bottom, you have square root of u. And then I'll put the minus sign up front like that. Don't forget it. I just used here that dx is minus du. So that's why there's a minus in the du. Okay, are you with me?
Yes.
Okay. Now we have to compute this. Maybe this doesn't look any easier to you, but look what happens. If you write this as u to the 1/2, multiply the top out, you end up just, it's not exactly a polynomial, but you end up integrating something that you can do easily using the power rule. The fact that integral of x to the a is 1 over 8 plus 1 x to the a plus 1. So let's do that. So this is minus, and I'm just going to make the inside simpler from the point of view of integration. And again, the reason I know it's simpler is because in my mind I have some examples of functions that I know how to integrate quickly. So we'll view this as u to the 1/2, and then I multiply the 1 minus u squared out, 1 minus 2u plus u squared du. So this is just, I'm just doing some algebra on this, made a little mistake, this should be a minus. Minus 1. Okay, and now distribute the u to the minus 1/2 across the sum. And you get minus integral, this is looking good, u to the minus 1/2, we know how to integrate that, minus 2 u to the 1/2 plus u to the 3/2 du. Each one of these individual terms we know how to integrate, so we're stuck, we've done it. So here you have minus an antiderivative of u to the minus 1/2. Somebody yell it out. Sure.
2 times the square root of u.
Okay, 2 square root of u. Excellent. Because if you differentiate this, the 1/2 and the 2 cancel, and you subtract 1 off the exponent, you get minus 1/2. Next one. Everybody yell it out. What's an antiderivative of minus 2 u to the 1/2? Excellent. 4/3 u to the 3 house. Because I want to add this factor as well. And just check, if you differentiate, you do indeed get that. See, works. Plus, and now this one, 2/5 u to the 5 house. Okay, and then finally I'll distribute the minus sign across and I'll replace u by 1 minus x. That's very important because somebody may have done it with, I mean, you could just as well have done this problem with 1 minus 2x or 2 minus 2x or something similar. And at the end you get a different expression in u because your u would be different than mine. But when you replace u by x, you get something that is an equal function of x. That would simplify to this entry. So minus 2 square root of 1 minus x plus 4/3 1 minus x to the 3 halves plus 2/5 1 minus x to the 5 halves. And there it is. We've computed questions.
Minus 2/5.
Yes, you're right. Thank you. There it is. We've computed plus a constant. We've computed the antiderivative of this rather impenetrable looking function. This looked really hard to impenetrable, but all we had to do is know to do the substitution u equals 1 minus x. Once we did that, it's, I think, relatively straightforward. You do this substitution, you get this, which turns out to be an easier to do integral. Yes?
Why is there a minus?
It's for the following reason. So the derivative du is equal to minus dx, because the derivative of 1 minus x is minus 1. Du is g prime of x dx. So, or this is u prime of x dx. Okay, do you see that part? So I'm replacing, here you have dx. I solve for dx. It's minus du. And this implies that dx equals minus du. You can just work with these things formally. Dx is minus du. And if you replace dx by minus du, you have to put the minus sign somewhere. I decided to put it over here. But I could have just as well put it right next to this. As long as, but see, the problem there is you might think I'm subtracting du, which doesn't make any sense. Okay, any other questions or comments? So now you know how to do a couple of examples using substitutions. So the technique is you let u be something, but the thing that distinguishes somebody that really knows how to do it from somebody who doesn't is knowing which choice of u to make. And you really only know that by having seen lots of integrals that you're able to do. For example, here it's square root of some complicated, slightly complicated looking thing, and you might know that you can compute the integral of square root of a single variable. So that motivates making this change. You want to, whenever you have the square root of something, if possible, you'd like to replace it by square root of a single variable, and then you're set. Then the rest of the complicated follow pretty formally. Okay, comments, questions? Good. Now you know how to do substitutions. Now I'll tell you how to do it for definite intervals. So here's how it works. Here's the formula. The integral from a to b of f of g of x, g prime of x dx, think of this as being du, it's again a definite integral from something to something else of f of u du. And this is what it is. It turns out it's from g of a to g of b. Where here g, u is equal to g of x. So how could you have done this? How could you do a definite integral using substitution techniques if you didn't know this formula? Well, what you would do is you could take the integrand, find an indefinite integral of that, and then subtract off the value, take the difference of the value of your indefinite integral at each endpoint. And this just encodes that in a simpler formula, in a single formula. This answers the question, what happens to the endpoints of integration when you use the substitution rule? You simply evaluate the endpoints at using this function that you're doing substitution with. So again, let me show you more precisely why it's true. Why on earth? You know, why is it g of a, g of b instead of g inverse of a, g inverse of b? Well, it is, and I'll convince you. So here's how I hope to convince you. Again, let's suppose capital F is an antiderivative of little f. You may find it, possibly you wanted to think about doing this explicitly using the substitution method. Then integral f prime of g of x, g prime of x, dx from a to b is the same thing as the integral from a to b of the derivative with respect to x of f of g of x dx. This may feel very familiar because this is exactly what I wrote before, but with endpoints. And now, again, integration and differentiation, these are mutually inverse operations up to the subtlety of a constant. So this is, well, in order to compute this, what would you do? You would try to find, you know, imagine this is some function here, you would try to find a function whose derivative is this function, namely the thing on the inside. So this is f of g of x from boundless limits. See, this is an antiderivative. So you can use it to compute the integral. But this is just f of g of b minus f of g of a, i.e., it's the integral from g of a to g of b of capital F of capital F of u du. So if you just see it explicitly, it's f of g of b. These are the endpoints where you, these are the points at which you end up evaluating your capital F. Capital F being an antiderivative of little f, that's what you compute here. So if you were to compute this, what would you do? You find an antiderivative of little f, namely capital F, and then this says take that and take the value of g of b and subtract off the value of g of a. And that's exactly what this original integral is. Yes, please.
If you wanted to, could you switch it back to x before doing it and then
Definitely. Just
use a and b?
Yep, but think about what you're doing when you switch back to x. I'll get to your question in just a second, I promise. When you switch back to x, what did we do when we switched back to x? We had u, and we substituted in u as a function of x everywhere. So if you're going to then put the endpoints in, you may as well just taken u of the endpoints and stuck it here. Because it gets complicated. If u is, you know, some really complicated function, you have to substitute a huge complicated function in all over the place, and then you just end up evaluating that at the two endpoints anyways. But you can do both things. What's your name again?
For the last step of that explanation, why do you keep using capital F?
Oh. I made a mistake. Should be a little off. Good job. Touché. which is good because I was trying to prove that this is equal to that, and now I have on the left-hand side this, and on the right-hand side that. So, and it's nice that it's like this.
Can you get an example real quick?
Yes, sure. We'll see. I didn't have one prepared. Integral from 0 to square root of pi x cos x squared. X cos x squared, this is an example of a function where if you didn't know anything about substitution, you might be like, I can't guess from what I know from differential calculus and antiderivative. But now that we do know about substitution, what do you want to do?
Square
equals
x squared.
Perfect, x squared. Du is 2x dx. Now, integral from what goes here? What's the lower limit?
What
have to
do?
You have to substitute in 0 to the, formula. Yes, it's still 0. Good. What about the upper limit?
Pi.
Pi. Very good. Square root of pi squared, otherwise known as pi. Okay, now here, here we have x dx. So we want to put 1 half, whatever is going to be here, du. You see what I did? Just think about it this way. You take this formula, it says 1 half du is equal to x dx, and we very nicely happen to have x and dx here. So now what goes on the inside?
Cosine u.
Cosine u, perfect. And whoa, suddenly we have something where we know exactly how to compute an antiderivative. So that would be 1 half times sine of u. Between 0 and pi, and then that's 1 half sine of pi is 0 minus sine of 0, which is 0. So it's 0. Okay, so there's your example. So all you do when you do a substitution to change variables, you change the endpoints of the integration using exactly the same formula that you're using to change x. You're letting u be x squared, you let the endpoints be the squares of the originals, or whatever your function is. And it can't be the other way around or something like substituting in the square root, because that would just be too complicated to ever actually use. All right, so one other thing I was going to mention is symmetry, but it's pretty odd. An even function and odd function, there are special ways to quickly integrate. I'll say something about that on Wednesday. All right, so I'll see you on Wednesday. Have a great 3-day weekend. No, because what I'm doing is I have this substitution u is x squared, so that's exactly what I used. If this had been x squared plus 1, it would have been pi plus 1.
But doesn't that change that?
Mm-hmm. And that's why it changes everything. Every single thing changes when you make the substitution. The endpoints of the integration, what you're integrating down here as well.
Sure. And so it's like x squared, so you... So if the 0 is a 2,
mm-hmm.
that becomes a 4?
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Okay.
Here, try this one. If you add from 3 to 18, I don't care what, dx, and u were equal to 2x minus 1.
So that would be...
What would you do?
36 minus 135.
Yep. Okay. What would you put here? Excellent. See, now you have it.
Okay.
Thank you. Very good. Yes?
I want to ask about the endpoints here.
Yes, please. So all you do is you take the endpoints and you compute g of them, where g is the function of x that you're letting u equal. So here, I let u be x squared, And the endpoints, I just squared them. Okay, 0 squared and square root of pi of quantity squared. And that works in complete generality. Whenever you do a whenever you use the substitution method, the way you compute the new endpoints of the integral is just by substituting in for x in the formula. Okay. And the reason is just because if you imagined doing everything out and then getting it back in terms of x, then you would just end up substituting it in here. So in this example, u was 1 minus x, and the endpoints you'd end up putting in here. So you'd end up doing the same thing. It's really just exactly the same thing.
You're just trying to do everything in terms of u instead of x.
Yeah. It saves you the work. I mean, it's really miserably painful if you have to put the u equal to whatever it's equal to back again and then do it all. It's just like wasteful of your effort. So save you time.
If like u was 2x and that would have been 2 pi?
That's right. No, it would have been 2 squared pi.
Why is f of x turned into a lowercase? Wait, is that the case?
Little, oh,
I didn't get that. I couldn't see that.
So this stuff right here?
Yeah.
So remember, capital F is an antiderivative of little f.
Okay. No, I didn't.
And what is this integral? It's, how do you compute this? You would compute an antiderivative of little f, and then evaluate it at g of v, and subtract off the value of g of a. This has to be true, because this is an antiderivative of little f, evaluated at g of v.
So you integrate little f of u, that would just turn into a
That's right.
Firstly, my thought about the even problem on the homework
is because
all of the answers are for odd number problems. I couldn't necessarily check my results.
This is fun. I get this.
It's fun too.
Are you the host or the doctor's son? I don't know.
You can call me William.
Okay, William feels fun too.
I guess officially I'm a tenured associate professor, so you can call me Professor Stein if you want it.
Okay.
But I prefer William.
I prefer William. Dr. Hager? I was calling him Mr. Hager.